Good morning, good evening, depending upon what part of the world you're in. If it's Friday, you know it is the CEO Series, where we bring together the most inspiring leaders, entrepreneurs, innovators from across the globe to share their insight. Our guest today is a longtime friend, coworker, Crystal Cooper, distinguished people operations leader with nearly two decades of experience as a servant leader, strategic business partner to senior executive. So she's playing the role that HR is aspiring to. She spent the better part of her career partnering with startups, focusing on crafting, implementing people-centric frameworks, which I call architecture, that shapes org culture based on company's core values. And with that, I say, hey, Crystal, how are you?
Hello, Ron. I mean, this is certainly a different conversation than when we have lunch at Bryant Park, but I'll take it.
Yeah, right. But, you know, we'll get into that. So, yeah, I always like to start with talking about your career. You're now chief people officer of an organization. You work with startups. Walk us through your career journey.
Oh, goodness. Let's see. You know, I went to college for graphic design.
Yeah.
So years after doing that for a while, I just said, you know, I need to see what else is out there. And I dabbled a little bit quickly with a small staffing firm. Four of us, we sat in a little table, we stared at each other, and we recruited and moved around all of the top talent on Wall Street. Did that for a little bit, and I said, you know, I'm not sure if this is it. So I went back and did graphic design again for a little bit, and I walked into a pretty large staffing firm that is pretty well known, and I said, hey, can you get me a job doing some graphic design work? I'd moved back to the New York metro area, and I was trying to just get my foot back in the door. And they said, actually, we can do one better. Can we teach you to recruit creatives? And then you can place those people. I said, all right, I'll try it. I did that for about a year, and I just realized the staffing agency world is not for me. I wanted to follow all of these people once I placed them somewhere. I wanted to make sure that wherever I was putting them, they were going to a really great place where they were going to be able to utilize their talent and be successful. And I wanted to follow it. So then one of my customers was Martha Stewart Living, as you know. And I had been working with you all for a while. And the person who I'd been working with was, hey, we have an opening, and it's going to be recruiting for all of our tech talent, as well as a few other different areas of business, but really heavily in our software engineers and IT and that whole side of business. We're revamping our site and all that other fun stuff. And I said, all right, well, I've actually never recruited for those types of people. And she said very, very firmly on the phone, do you want this job? And I said,
that's the mindset of Martha Stewart, right?
And you know, that was the turning point in my career where I really said, this is it. This is what I'm going to do for my career. And so I walked in the door, I took over four different departments, including tech. And I, you know, really just owned everything that I'd never owned before, but I just dove right into the deep end and figured it out fast. So,
that's so cool. You know, I look at trajectory. So the person says, I want you to do this. Do you want the job? Because if you would have maybe made a left turn or a U-turn, you probably would have ended up doing something else. Was that gut feel that you felt that maybe this is something I need to give it a shot? Or?
Oh, it absolutely was. First of all, it was a brand that I absolutely adored. I mean, it was one that I had watched growing up on, you know, on public TV, for God's sakes. Yeah. So, you know, having the opportunity to come on over and do all of the great pieces, which was people, which I really loved for a brand that I truly believed in. Mm-hmm. It was like a match made in heaven. So I was like, this is a no brainer. I'll be there.
Okay. So how did your leadership style develop? You know, you mentioned, you know, in your bio, servant leadership. That's different from the dictatorial kind of leader. How did that evolve, your style evolve as for being a leader?
I think it has always, excuse me, I think it's always been a part of who I am. Growing up, oldest of many, many children, and having to take care of all of that, right?
Yeah.
Then I spent the better part of my youth in retail. In retail, your job is to always be giving customer service. It's okay. Always taking care of you, right? And so from there, you just continue to compound that, and it becomes it is a part of you. And for me, the way that I run any people operations function for any organization, and the way that I've always operated as even just a leader in my space for my team, is how can I help you? What knowledge can I share? And how can I get you through this point in your time where it's either really rocky or things are going well, but you want to escalate it and get it to the next level? How can I help has always been sort of my mantra.
Mm. You know, when you think about the journey you've had, what was a major obstacle that was kind of a turning point? So you talked about the recruiting process, and I laugh when this is because that's a Martha Stewart. Do you want the job or not? You know, let's cut the BS, get right to it to do that. What are some obstacles you face? You talked about how your leadership style developed. What are obstacles that you face and made you realize that maybe I needed to do a U-turn or do something else as it relates to that?
Oh, gosh. So there were two that I mark so vividly, you know. So one was after I left Martha, I went over to a publishing agency.
Yeah,
Bonnier, yeah. And I was there for a little while and running the New York office. The market tanked, and one of the first industries to take that hit was publishing.
So
my role was eliminated along with pretty much almost my entire department, except for like three people. So we went from a department of, I think we were like 15 people in New York and Florida, and we went down to like three people. In that period of time, I took a step back and I said, gosh, I'm not that far into this career. Do I go back to graphic design? I really loved it. I still have everything. I still do it on the side. Do I make it a career again? And, you know, I started just sort of putting my foot out there as a designer and as an HR leader.
Okay.
And the HR leader always won out. So I must have picked up, I think I had at one point in time, five different clients at one point in time. So I was working about 70 hours a week, which, you know, when you're younger, it's not that bad. And so I was doing that, and I was just hustling. You know, I was at five different offices Monday through Saturday, working with various different organizations. I had some really great experiences. And that was that one moment where I said, you know what, this is it for me. So one of those customers I ended up getting full-time opportunity with, and I went over. I'll keep names out of it. But okay. I ended up working for a leader who really challenged my beliefs and my values in a way that was not healthy. And it really made me take pause and take stock in what, you know, this is the second time I'm now being challenged in a matter of only a couple of years.
Yeah.
Is this right for me? And, you know, one of the things that reminded me that it was right was a situation that I had that organization where a leader was treating one of his employees very unfairly because they were of a similar religion. Yeah. So he thought that he could treat her that way because that's just how it works in their religion. And I said, oh, we can't do that in the corporate world. Yeah. And I worked with both of them to really mediate and work through that issue. And we came to a resolution. And, you know, in that period of time, I just realized this is my calling. This is what I'm really good at. I love working with people. I love finding that success, or at least getting people to a place where they're going to be okay. Within a job, within their career. So those are the moments.
Yeah, so that coaching piece, you know, that you felt comfortable in mediating that, because a lot of HR people, somebody would have been written up, IDPs, all that foolishness.
I know.
But your approach was totally different. And said, let's see how we can mediate, collaborate, and bring those two distinct opposites together.
Yeah, you know, my goal is never to have to go right to that performance improvement plan. I want to talk to somebody. I want to say, hey, what's going on? I'm actually in the process of building a training that I'm going to roll out at the company where I'm at today around having those difficult conversations and then providing that feedback for redirection. Mm-hmm. How do you lean in and instead of just throwing your hands up and saying, get them out of here, this isn't working. Yeah. Well, maybe it's also not working because you, leader, haven't done your job in coaching and guiding them, or you haven't done your job in coming to me and saying, hey, I have an issue on my team. I think it might be starting to build up to something. It's very small now, but I just want to flag it. Oh, too often they wait until it's too late and they don't flag it in time.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Are you having a party?
No, that's my phone. That's my Dubai phone that's ringing. But let's just disregard that, and because it's going to go up in just a bit. So that learning moment, and you're bringing that now into your organization. Just go ahead and continue. Okay, stop. Talk to me about how you took those learnings, and now you are trying to ingrain that into your culture. Because you mentioned organizational culture based on company's core values. That's a connecting point. And now I'm building a product that takes it a step further.
Yeah. So when I join organizations, I really want to know, what are your company core values? Are you actually living them? Or are these just words on a paper? Are these words on the wall in the break room? Is this just a kitschy thing that you say so that you can bring talent in the door?
Yeah.
If you say yes to any of those, I don't bother with you.
Yeah.
I'm very, my personal values often align almost one for one with whatever the company's core values are. Okay. In that I really need to feel a connection to those values, because that's how this company is going to expect me to operate. That mm-hmm. is how I'm going to expect all of the leaders to operate, to make decisions, to lead their staff, to be that person who's going to be honest, be open, be innovative, have that culture of a safe and supportive community and that psychological safety. Those are all the things that I try to promote myself. And so really making sure that when we decide what these values are, if we're developing them, because often I've been there too, or if we already have values, I always, within the first few months of joining an organization, I'll assess the values and I'll say, hey, listen, do we really feel like these match how we operate today?
Okay.
And when we start to do things, I push back and I say, do we feel like that matches our values? Is that message that we're about to share, does it match our values?
Okay.
Does that training, or does the way that we structure our compensation for the organization, does that match our values? You've always got to look back at that, because your values are your core.
That's right. Well, to a receptive audience, they get that. So how do you, if someone is looking to find a new job and that their core values is important to them, how do you assess that in the interview process? What are some steps that you would guide people that's possibly looking for a job? Now, it doesn't have to be in HR, but core values are important to them. How can I determine that by spending an hour in this room with this so-called big shot?
It's not going to be in that 1 hour.
Okay.
Make sure you meet with enough people.
Okay.
Because it's not about one person. It's about all of them. And it's also about, it has to come from the top, right? So try to get up as high as you can and make sure that the questions you're asking really do align back to those values. Think about situations that you've been in at work that have tapped into those values. And simply ask them, hey, if you were in this type of a, look, this is as much them interviewing you as you should be interviewing them.
There we go. Yeah.
If you're not interviewing that company,
yeah,
you're doing yourself a disservice. You're going to walk in the door and they're going to pull back the curtain. You're going to be like, oh my God, this was not what I thought it was, right?
Yeah.
So in your interview process, you've got to interview them too. And getting up those times in your life or in your career when those values have come into play or have come into question, and ask them, flip it on them. Say, hey, I just want to know, if you were ever in this type of situation, how would you have handled it?
Ooh. Okay. So if we flip that back to I'm the person that's being interviewed, lots of times, and here's what I get from feedback from people that I talk to. They don't feel comfortable asking those kinds of questions. They may feel it comes off as a little arrogant and I'm going to interview you. But what you're saying is that we're interviewing each other to see whether we have the perfect fit or whatever you want to call that.
Yeah, look, at the beginning of my career, well, when I was doing consulting, so at that point in time when I left Bonnier and I went and started doing consulting, I was very particular about who I would work with because I knew that this was a pivotal moment in my career where I needed to make the decision, am I going to stay in people operations and HR or am I going to go back to graphic design? So when I said that to myself, I said, you know what? Then we're just going to go completely. We're going to go unfiltered, and here's who I am. Here's how I operate. Here are the questions I'm going to ask. And it's either going to work or I'm just going to go back over here. And it worked. And for me, having that opportunity to really find my voice in those meetings, in those interviews, and find my core of who I was, that was so instrumental in me being able to have all of the other opportunities I've had in my career. Being able to excel my career a lot faster than most of my peers at the time.
So aspiring HR leaders. So you started at a shop that was recruiting people. You got inside and you had four categories of people, and now you're top of the pyramid, big shot status. You know, everybody knows I always use that.
You always call me Big Shot. I get
Yeah,
it.
big shot status. So what advice would you give an aspiring lead, not so much for HR as to what they should build upon or learn from an organization, because you're closely connected to the business, and in a lot of cases HR is just HR, which is kind of a different side of the function. So if I go back to that vertical, what should an aspiring HR person say in recruiting but would like to try that journey to get to that level? What should they look for?
Well, first off, you have to ask yourself, do you have the wherewithal to deal with it? Because it can be really intense. At the beginning of my career, folks were like asking me, well, I'd always have an intern and they were always fantastic. And they'd say, you know, should I do this as like my career going forward? And I said, listen, one of the things I'm always going to say to you first and foremost is can you fire your best friend? I said, because what you're going to end up doing is you're going to become friends with these people. You're going to make friends in your organization because if you're really good at what you do, they've built trust with you. You have relationships. Obviously, HR and people ops, you have to have sort of that dividing line, right, for compliance and legal purposes. But I've had some really awesome friends. I've also had to let them go because we've done downsizings or because maybe their performance fell off. Of course, I've always tried to have conversations with them outside of work before that. Hey, what's going on? I always knew there was something else. So, you know, you have to be prepared for those really hard conversations because sometimes you don't know when they're coming. And then all of a sudden it's on your desk and you're like, oh, I have to let these people go today.
Whole disrupt yeah, whole disruption in their lives.
Yeah, I would say this. You know, for me, the great, and I'm glad you brought this up because I had someone say to me a couple weeks ago, you know, I've never worked with, and she called me HR, and I was like, oh,
They've
I've
never
never
worked with what?
worked with HR where they've been so ingrained in so many pieces of the business and so involved in the day-to-day. And I said, well, that's because I'm not HR, I'm people operations. There's a big difference. I'm not here to just hire, fire, write policy, run payroll, here's your benefits. I'm here to understand the whole business and how every single person fits into it so that we can all find that success together. And I think I've had some really great opportunities in my career, both at startups and large-sized businesses, where I've been able to just go right behind the curtain and see exactly how everything is done. And I think one of my startups, I even had to step into an operations function where I was running our manufacturing facility.
Can't train for that one, right? What's the course? That's webinar on manufacturing skills.
I can do it. That's always been my motto is, you know what? I don't know it, but I can do it.
You talked about trust. Building trust. You talk about building trust within your organization, and then we can flip that to say building trust from the C-suite down, and that permeates. Is that a tough task?
You know, I think often just my personality and how I approach people as people helps to build that trust quickly. But I've been at organizations where we've had to go through rifts, where we've had to cut staff and or make crazy changes where it breaks that trust very fast. And I think one of the things that is really hard is to get that trust back. And oftentimes, what folks don't understand is that I personally don't make 90% of the calls. I might give my feedback and input on how I think something is working or not working. But I don't make that decision. And I think when folks think through it, they see HR come in the room, right? And they say, oh, HR is
Do
in the room. These
start
guys.
hiding.
Yeah. I was joking with one of my coworkers. I said, for Halloween, we're going to do a little paint and sip here. We're going to do a virtual paint and sip. I said, I feel like, do you think it would be weird if I dressed up as the Grim Reaper?
Branding.
Right? I mean, that's it, right? So I'm just like, you know, that's the thing is that building of trust, it's all about sharing your knowledge quickly, creating that genuine and real connection with somebody. You can't fake that. People suss that out really fast, right? You've got to be real.
They can spot it a mile away. I remember an HR leader telling me that when she would drive to one of the locations, people would run away and they would go in the offices and close the door. And she was laughing about it. And I said, and you feel comfortable with that being your brand? That you're the Grim Reaper coming and you're looking to see who can I pull out and I'm going to do XYZ too? I said, you really need to rethink that comment you made because that's not funny at all.
No, and hey, I've worked with people like that where when they walk in the room goes quiet. People just start heads down. And I don't love that. I want to walk into an organization, I want to walk into a department, and I want people to come over and be like, hey, what's going on? What are you up to? Can I tell you about what's going on in my life? I would love to know because what happens in your life, what happens there, it affects what happens here at work.
Comes back in Monday through Friday in some way. I always said that, people, we all have luggage. Some people leave our luggage at home. Some people bring them to work. Some people bring them into their cubicle office or whatever it is. So we're always dealing with a whole lot of issues surrounding people. That luggage is there.
You are dealing with people. That's it. And people are raw. They're real. They're gray. There's so much that comes in.
So here's a thought. I remember reading a white paper and it said that as the C-suite skews younger, you'll see a lot more drastic changes because they came up in a different era. So when you think about young leaders and understanding the people component, tying it together, so they may look at the HR department as a person that's in charge of building out the trust. How do you have discussions with younger leaders? Because I mentioned that because you've been involved in quite a few startups, so you understand that side of the business, which is totally different from an organizational structure, big org chart, and all of this kind of thing, 1,200 people, and you may have 100 people.
100 people. Most of
But
the
I
time,
say
we have
100.
less than 50. But
Okay. I was
you're
giving you the
right.
benefit
I
of
mean,
the doubt,
it's different. And I will say this, when you mention the fact that you've got these folks who've moved up very quickly, they're very young. They lack what my CEO here calls my magic bag of tricks. They don't have that magic bag of tricks. In that bag, there's only, a handful of things, maybe more. But when you deal with a much more established leader, they've got this bag of tricks where they've tried and true something, or they checked a box before, but the next time the box came to them to check, it was different. And they had to figure out a different strategy to get that box checked, right? I use that same scenario for anyone who's not even a leader, just for staff that are looking to move up. If you're looking to move up every year, you're missing so much opportunity to give yourself those tools that you need in that magic bag of tricks. Without them, you get to that higher level position so fast that you then don't know how to deal with, well, why isn't this person performing? Or, You know, how, why aren't we successful with rolling out this policy or this process or whatever? Because they've just not had enough experience. Yeah. So they really yeah. do lean very much so more on me, which I appreciate. And that's why I'm here, right? Is I've gone through probably, I'll go with 70% of what they're going to deal with, because there's always going to be that 20 or 30% that I just have never dealt with that I'm going to have to figure out on the fly. Mm. Even now. Right? Because people change, culture changes,
yeah.
times change, technology.
Yes. Oh, so change is a constant today. So you came from a corporate side. Was it a big transition coming from the corporate side to a startup? My, say 50 max people that you're dealing with. And your role is now expanded because now you're involved in all facets of it.
Yeah,
it was
for two reasons. One, because obviously in from the corporate side, you typically have a much more narrower scope, right? So on the corporate side, my role was either my role was typically only managing a few departments up to about 200-300 people worth of, you know, staff, but I wasn't doing everything: benefits, payroll, compensation, talent acquisition. Oftentimes I was just sort of handling one small piece for a very large group. Come over to startups. You handle all of it. It is all yours.
Yeah.
Benefits, payroll. What's the compensation strategy? Hey, by the way, we also manage our 401k in-house. So now you're a fiduciary of a 401k.
Yeah.
Employee development and engagement, all those things. And, you know, when you join a startup, it's just so different because you have to be able to switch those hats quickly and you have to be able to do it effectively, too. You can't just half-ass anything. Yeah. And in a startup, things are moving so much faster than in the corporate world. Corporate world, you have change. It happens. But it comes
gradual. Yeah.
Yeah. In the startup, it's a firefight regularly.
Yeah. So you come in every day, there's a fire to put out. What, you know, I love the concept. You said bag of tricks. You know, someone told me, I say stories. I can give you stories on various situations and how it either worked or didn't work. Building up that bag of tricks. And, you know, so that the person says, I want to move every year. And I'm so focused on the next year movement that I'm not immersing myself in what I'm learning now at this stage. Talk me through that, stepping back and breathing in what's happening around me, you know.
You know, it's interesting. There are obviously different motivators for people, right? It's money, it's title, and hopefully it's about the knowledge. And there's always going to be a different way to do something. And I always try to sell, I try to say, if you can sit there and handle an issue, and you can sit there and come to me with three or four different solutions for it, then it's time to move up, check out some new issues. Okay. But if you come to me with an issue and you really can only give me one solution, you're not ready.
Yeah.
You aren't being that sort of, you're not tapping into that analytical side of what you need to learn. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I try to push for folks to do is, it doesn't matter your role or your level, get outside of your current job and start to network and actually talk to people. Because what you end up gathering is all of this exceptional knowledge, and you can share your experience with someone outside of the organization and say, how would you handle it? Ron, I can't even count on one hand how many times I have called you and said, Ron, I am in a pickle. I've got like three ways to fix this, but I feel like none of them are 100% the right way. Can I talk to you about it?
Yeah, we've had some interesting conversations over the years. We really have had interesting conversations.
I think that's the fun part, right? I think, you know what? Most of the situations we've talked about have always been with younger leaders.
Yeah, I learned that from Susan Lyon, who was the second CEO. I came to her, my first presentation to her, and I gave her some issues. I outlined some things, and she said, all you did, you came here and you just gave me a whole host of problems. She said, and I'm sure you probably could think through and offer solutions next time. If there is a next time you come in, fine, give me the problem, but give me your interpretation of that. Give me two or three different approaches to how we could do that. I never forgot that.
Because, you know, I've received very similar feedback from a former CEO. He said, when you come in my office, in the first 2 minutes, I need to know exactly what all the problems are and how you think you're going to figure them out. And then we can dive deeper into them. But you got 2 minutes of my attention, because after that, I start looking at my computer and checking emails.
Yeah.
He said, oh, goodness. Mm-hmm. And I look down at my list of 15 items and I think to myself, how do I get this down to 2 minutes?
Yeah. So when you think about that, learning from that is next time I got to be a little more prepared when I have, because a meeting with a staff is different than a meeting with a plus one or a meeting with the C-suite or the board. And I always tell specifically young HR leaders that those are 3 to 4 different audiences. And on each audience level, you're going to perform differently. And you're going to have to think about that even in the content you're going to be producing to them or solutions.
Yeah, that message has to be tailored to the audience. I mean, I say that we do a company all hands here every Monday. Every department comes and says their piece. And I say that to each leader is, hey, is the message you're sharing, are you sharing it properly to the audience? Does the whole audience grasp what you're saying, or is half the audience lost? I think that goes with, we did this presence and presentation training here as well, where I built out the training where we had all of the leaders sort of be our guinea pigs to see how the training goes in-house. Because normally I'll pay $15,000, $30,000, $40,000 to bring in an outside resource and teach them how to do presentations and how to command the room. But, you know, budget constraints happen. And so I had to build it. And here, one of the things I push through for anybody is know your audience and how they're going to receive that message. If they can't digest that message, you've got it wrong. Yeah. If you have to, go and share that message with somebody in your house and say, hey, I'm going to share a message with you. You tell me if you get this, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are skills you've learned over a period of time. So when I call it vertical. So you're working in HR and you live, eat, breathe, and sleep it. Eat, breathe, and sleep in HR. Expand that out and talk to a group in finance to understand what they're doing, manufacturing to understand what they're doing. Because when you do that, you're broadening your horizon versus just the vertical of HR. And that's all that I stay in. And my whole lens is always through that filter.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't do that if you're going to try to be an effective leader in people operations. You just can't. You have to know the whole business. You've got to ask the questions. You might think that they're the dumbest question ever, but you know what? If you don't know how it works in the software engineering team and how they code or build the product, how can you properly recruit somebody?
Yeah.
If you don't know how marketing pushes out your product and who they market to, how can you possibly go to a networking event and talk about your product?
Yeah.
Everybody in the organization is a seller, right? And you can't sell the product if you don't know it. You're not going to know it if you don't sit there and talk to the folks in sales operations, in finance, in marketing, in whatever. If you don't talk to those folks and you don't understand what they do every day and how they do it, you can't effectively help your CEO, because that's typically who your partner is, right? Yeah. It's the CEO. You can't effectively help that person strategize the people around getting that thing out the door.
Mm. If you had to design a leadership development course, now I know that the market could be different because it could be a startup. It could be a more established company with a stronger org chart and all of those kinds of things. What would be some key building blocks that you think, based on what you've gone through, that leaders should be able to comprehend? You have a couple of anchors. What would they be?
Emotional intelligence.
Okay.
Number one. Because I think that then feeds into effective communication, building trust within your team. And then once you've done that, then you can sit there and create more of that learning mindset. More of that focus on how do you develop not just yourself, each person on your team, and the team as a whole. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that will drive. So if I'm talking to my CFO, those are all things that drive profitability and productivity. Right. So going back to how do you share that message? Look, we're always in, we're in this people operations HR bubble, right? We know that performance management is important. We know that doing reviews and giving feedback is important. We know that taking time out to talk to your staff about their development, we know those are all important things, right? But do you know who doesn't fully live and breathe that every day? All of your leaders. And so you have to be able to take those things. I was just talking to somebody the other day about this. You have to be able to take that HR or people operations message and turn it into something that they understand.
Yeah.
How does it align the business? Yeah. What's the bottom line impact?
What you're talking is the new level of HR leader, because I've had some HR leaders that was only concerned with process and administrative. And an entire department was just tamped down because everybody was, they couldn't do anything because they could only focus on, you know, on that vertical piece. So you mentioned emotional intelligence and building that through. So leaders, a lot of times they say all the cool buzzwords. It's on the website. They say it at a town hall. They walk out of the town hall and they revert back to not living, eating, breathing, sleeping that. How do you nurture that mindset of emotional intelligence and connecting with people more versus the CEO that we know all the answers and it's the way that we say do it and we're going to do it this way?
Yeah, and you know, I've worked for CEOs like that too. Is look, I get where you're trying to go with all your touchy feely, you know. Let's find a kumbaya moment, but here's what has to happen. And I'll say, okay, well, I understand that, but let me help you understand. If we continue to not do my way, or at least a piece of it, here's what's going to happen. We're going to lose people.
Okay.
We're going to lose knowledge. Mm-hmm. We're going to slow down because I'm going to have to hire new people. Mm-hmm. And you're lucky if I find that person within the first 3 months and they're up and running in 3 more months. So that's 6 months of a hit of productivity, right?
Yeah.
So there's just, you know, you have to, I don't want to use the word preach, but you have to use it all the time. You have to share with them and ask them those questions. How are you taking care of yourself? How are you taking care of your team? Let's talk about each person. For each leader that I support, I always meet with them every single week, if not biweekly. We talk about every single person in the team. We talk about where's their productivity as far as work, what's going on in their personal life.
Yeah.
Have you been talking to them about their personal life?
Yeah.
If not, why not? Right?
They could have come up in an era that says, I'm a 9-to-5 leader and I'm focused on deliverables. I don't want to know if that's the 180, I don't want to know the full 360 of a person. Maybe you just had your mother move in and you're stressed out over that and your projects are kind of lagging. And this is why I should understand the whole person versus the 9-to-5 person.
Yeah, because you know what else? What you can do is, and so I'll say two things on that. One is what you can do is simply say, okay, well, what are you working on today? And how can I lighten your load so that you can take care of this thing? Who can this go over to?
Yeah.
Right. But I think when you flip it on its other side is everyone's always got a high performer on their team, right? And we got this high performer. They're doing really great. Let's give them more. They're awesome. Let's move them up. Well, here's what you've done. You've never given that high performer a chance to take a pause and refresh.
Yeah.
They're going to burn out. And if they don't burn out at your company, they're going to leave your company to go somewhere else for a refresh.
Exactly.
And this is high performers, they need that cycle.
Yeah. This is why the title of our talk was Making the Business Case. This is why that's important. You know, when you talk to people and what you do, I want to recognize, one of our guests was a frequent listener, John Self. And he just mentioned one of my favorite questions is when they say servant leader. Okay, cool. Let's tell me more. What does that mean to you?
Yeah.
And lots of times it comes back to the buzzword kind of thing. I know all the cool things to say. I know, emotional intelligence is important and we try to be emotional intelligent leaders. Tell me more. Tell me how you're living, eat, breathing, sleeping that. And normally, I don't want to say normally, because I watch CNBC for the most part, and I see interviews, and I said, I would have taken that interview a totally different way, because I would have said, give me two examples as to how you exhibit servant leadership. What is that about? Tell me more about that. pause.
Yeah, don't just use it as a marketing tag. It's got to be real in who you are and how you represent your role, how you support those around you.
So John also mentioned, you know, coaching advice, and what we're talking about is a coaching approach to leadership, not a dictatorial way of this is the way we're going to do it, then no questions asked. I don't collaborate because all the brain power sits in the C-suite.
Yeah, look, I could sit here and my, you know, I could sit here and say, no, we're not going to do it that way. Let me tell you how we do this. Let me tell you what happens.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. It's abrasive. And what it immediately does is it shuts down this person who thinks they know more than you already.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what titles are. It really doesn't. It just matters what they think they know. And so what my approach is, I'm going to come in and I'm going to tell you, hey, listen, I hear what you want to do. Let me help you understand my experience in doing that way. Here are the six different ways that it has played out. Some are not bad. Some are terrible. And some might be okay. But the way that you're going to play it out is very similar to this other situation that didn't work out well, or that did work out well, but let's build on it and make it better. How can we make it even smoother of a process? To a point where you, it has to be more of a conversation. It has to be consultative.
Yeah. Two way.
It, you know what? It doesn't matter how young or the age of the leader I've worked with. They all look at HR and they're like, oh.
Okay. Yeah. Pigeonhole. Yeah. In that box. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And you have to really command the room. You have to step in and say, let me help you understand my experience and why you hired me. And if you don't want to tap into those things, then I think I'm tapping out. It's my time to go.
Yeah. One of the key points that I learned from our former employer, it was the first time I had ever been close to a CEO, Sharon, who I knew personally, Martha, who I knew personally. But I'd always noticed how they would come in sometimes in the morning. They were running late. People were in their offices. And they would stop by the admin assistant and pull up a chair. Sharon was known for that. They'd be looking for Sharon. She'd be in the mail room on Monday morning arguing with the mail guys about the game the previous night. And they would come looking for her. She said, tell them, wait, I'm talking to my employees. And I said, when I grow up, I want to be like this. I want to be that kind of leader who spends time with people that's not aligned to a position on the org chart. The mailroom probably was the bottom of the org chart, if it was even on the org chart. But to her, every Monday morning, that was a stop.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. So back when we were in person and we had receptionists, right? I would always go to, when I would have folks coming in for interviews, I'd always, my receptionist would call and say, hey, so-and-so is here to talk to you. Okay, tell me, were they nice to you? How did they approach the desk? What are they doing right now? Are they engaging in conversation with you? Or are they just sitting there with their face in their phone or book or a paper or whatever? I want to know how you treat the lowest paid salary person or the lowest paid hourly person. I don't care. I want to know how you treat that lowest paid person.
Yeah.
Because that's how you're going to always act. That speaks to your values, right? I had someone walk in and he was so rude to my receptionist and I made him wait 10 minutes. And then I finally went out there and I shook his hand and I said hello and I introduced myself and he 180, totally different personality, right?
Yeah.
So he came in my office, I interviewed him. And at the end of the interview, I said, hey, listen, you know, I was shared that my receptionist had a very interesting experience with you. I'd like to talk about that because I think that doesn't really tie back to our company values here.
Ooh.
Oh, I called him out. He obviously did not get hired.
Yeah. Yeah. Kudos to you. Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah. But there's a company in Vegas that sells shoes. I don't know. What's the name of it? That's part of the interview process because when they fly into Vegas, the driver has to pick them up. So the driver's a part of the interview process. Were you rude? Okay. Were you connecting? Did you share stories? Where you just said, could you just drive because I'm stressed or whatever it is? They got feedback from that first portion, but that person was not seen as strategic and they figured they could just treat them anyway. And I forget the name of the brand now, but they're located in Vegas and Amazon owns them. That was a part of my interview process.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I would have crushed it because drives my husband crazy. I'll talk to anybody.
Me too.
Everyone's got a story. I want to know it. I'm so nosy. I just want to know it all.
Yeah.
But you know what I do? All those stories, they all go into my magic bag of tricks. So I run this group called the HR. I know we're almost at time, right? I want to be cognizant here, but I have this group that I run. It's called the HR Forum. We're a smaller group, about 15 of us HR leaders across different organizations. And we joined together because another group had brought us together. At one point in time, that group said, hey, we'd like to monetize this. And we were like, we're not looking to pay for any of this. We have great knowledge together. We have great conversations. Why do we have to change it? So I said, you know what? I'll take it over. And so I've been running it. And you know what I get out of that group? I don't care if it costs me a dime. Yeah. I get so much knowledge from each one of those people in that group, in hearing their experiences, in sharing my experiences, in us talking about a situation together and sharing
uplifting.
How we approach it.
Yeah. So John said you could preach at his church every Sunday based on your messaging. So thank you so much. I mean, we're coming up on the time now. One of the goals of the show is to create a platform for leaders like yourself to discuss their career journeys. And you brought a masterclass today, connecting culture, people, C-suite, all those. Are there any takeaways from being on the show? Because I know you're a frequent listener.
I am. And you know what, Ron? The reason why I love watching this show, and it doesn't matter who you're interviewing, I love hearing everyone's experiences.
Yes.
I love hearing things that they've gone through in their careers. I love hearing about things they've gone through in their personal life and trying to figure out where do I belong. Those are all things I just take and I stick in that magic bag of tricks. So that's my takeaway, is these types of conversations, we need more of them where people share. Oftentimes, you don't have enough of that in an organization where you even just have your leaders just sharing their experiences throughout their career. So I think this is great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being a guest. What time is it in Colorado now?
Let's see. It's almost 8 a.m. and the sun is just starting to come up. But let me tell you, this weekend is going to be really cold and we're supposed to get snow. And I could not be more excited.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much. We'll be in touch offline. We got to close out now. Thank you for being a guest.
You. Take care.
Okay.